Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Please consider supporting Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Well, hey there, it's Zach, all the way from Chesapeake, Virginia. Creative Control happens to be my favorite podcast. I value Visha's insight and his ability to balance humor with in-depth conversation while occasionally dipping into serious topics. Regardless of whether I've heard of the guest or not, or however long Visha's known them, you really do get the feeling that the two of them have known each other for a long time, and I walk away from every episode feeling like I gained something. I think that's testament to how good of a journalist and conversationalist Visha is. He has a real skill of opening people up. I also enjoy the spicy and lighthearted ribbing Vish does with his guests from time to time. Oh, and while I have you, did you know that for just $6, you can subscribe to the Creative Control Patreon and get access to all kinds of bonus content? And for $10, Vish will mail you one of his t-shirts. And hey, that peaches shirt is pretty cool. Anyway, enjoy the episode and doot-doodle-oot-doo. Oh, wait.
Ben Chasney is a prolific songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, singer, and producer based in Humboldt County in Northern California. Renowned for his work as a guitarist in bands like Comets on Fire and Rhonda, Chasney is likely best known for his solo endeavor, Six Organs of Admittance, a psychedelic folk expression active since the late 1990s that is ever expansive and exploratory. The latest album by Six Organs of Admittance is, among other things, a meditation on home, personal relationships, and modern life. It's called Time is Glass. It was released on April 26, 2024, via Drag City Records, and it prompted Ben and I to reconnect for a talk about things like his return to Northern California after many years living in different parts of the United States, the politically charged conversation we had when Rhonda was on the show and made some incorrect predictions about the 2016 U.S. presidential election, getting himself a dog and reading about demon familiars, living in the moment and spiritual practices, unreliable narrators, shifting pronouns, and songs that contain multitudes, a Simpsons Easter egg, touring again, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this listener-supported and donor-driven podcast. Spread the word about it. Leave nice reviews and ratings on your podcast platform if you have a moment to do that. And make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living. All amounts are welcome, of course, And it's, like I say, it's monthly, it's flexible. So if you'd like to support the show and receive some extra benefits beyond the regular podcast, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. Thank you so much. Plus in-kind support from independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 860 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Ben Chasny from Six Organs of Admittance, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Ben, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's well, thank you. Where in the world are you today?
Today, I am in my little office area in Humboldt County, California.
Yes, I understand that you've returned to Humboldt County. I thought I saw something about that. Is that true?
In a way, I think that every record needs a story. So even though I technically returned here quite... a few years ago, I've actually already put out a record since I've been back, but you know, one of those things where Drag City, the record label, thought, what is going on in your life? We have to come up with something interesting. So that was sort of the tagline for, you know, oh, he's returned home, but really I've been here for a few years.
Okay. So maybe we should dial into that. Actually, before we get too much further, thanks for being back on the show. I was trying to recall the last time you and I chatted, and it might have been in person in Toronto. Is that right?
I think so. With Rhonda?
Yeah. And yeah. I do so many of these. Now, that was episode, I was looking it up. It was like episode 245, and as we're speaking, I'm into the 850s now, and I'm like,
wow.
It's becoming a bit of a blur. Anyway, I just want to say thanks for making time for me again, and it's just nice to see you and have this lovely record to talk about. But yeah, let's get back to what I was asking about there. First of all, where did you return home from? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, Humboldt County is it's about 6 hours north of San Francisco. And yeah, I keep thinking about our last interview and how I always, but I'm not going to get off track, but I did want to say, I always think about that because that was right before the 2016 elections.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I remember some members of my group, Rhonda, making some very strong declarations of how that United States election would go, which he was completely wrong. And so I always think about that interview that we did. It's funny.
Oh, but anyway. That would have been Richard probably making those declarations?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know what? According to my notes, and I didn't listen back, Chris Gersano also took part. I thought it was just you, me, and Richard, but that's what my
note
was. Everyone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All three of us. And I remember you asked about what do you think is going to happen? And there were some strong opinions, which absolutely did not happen. So it was pretty funny. Anyway, so I always think about that interview because thinking about being asked I will never know what's going to happen. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back to Humboldt. Yes, I grew up here and then I left in about 2000 and then came back around October of 2019.
Okay. So you left for San Francisco? Is that what you were alluding to?
Pretty much. I moved to Santa Cruz, lived there for about 4 or 5 years. Then I moved to Oakland and then San Francisco and Seattle and then Western Mass and all over.
Oh, okay. Mostly California with a foray into New England.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. About 10 years in New England.
Oh.
So about 10 years. So it's about 4 years San Francisco, 3 or 4 years Bay Area, 2 years Seattle, and then about 10 years New England.
Okay. So I don't know why you moved exactly. Was it for work reasons or something like that?
You know, witness protection program, and it's sort of
just avoiding Richard and his opinions. Is that why you're just like, Richard, he's pontificating exactly. All the time. I need to get away. Yeah.
I'm giving you the scoop right now. I've never mentioned it before, but I don't know. I just always wasn't really work, but more if I started to not like a place, I just left.
Okay. Fair enough.
So yeah. I was kind of, which I realized isn't the greatest way to do things. And one of the things I learned is just like every place is good and every place has a bad part and every place has a good part. Sometimes one more than the other, depending on the place. But I kind of stopped running away from places just because I thought there was something about them that wasn't so great.
I can totally relate. I mean, when we last spoke, I don't think we've spoken remotely since that chat we had in Toronto. But at the time, I was living in Guelph, Ontario, about an hour away from Toronto. As I'm speaking to you now, moved to Edmonton, Alberta. So quite far.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And similarly, like, what are we running from? What are we doing? Are we running from something? You know, in our case, my wife's family's from here. We both got better jobs. Housing market in Ontario was and still is bonkers. You can't afford to get a house. Two kids, you know, all this stuff. So yeah, you move, you hope it's going to be better. And sometimes you discover, you know, who came with me when I moved? Me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So some,
and you learn things. Yeah. Yeah. You learn that the time to make a decision to move shouldn't be in springtime or summer when the place is absolutely beautiful.
Yes.
And your friends are taking you to all the nice places. You should probably go in the winter time before you move to any place.
100%. We moved, I think we left Ontario and left our house, like the very end of December 2019, mm-hmm. and then got here, and then there was immediately a pandemic, which I haven't made this joke in a while. I think it might be my fault. I think our family moved, and the Earth's access the Earth couldn't handle it. You know, the whole.
That's interesting because, yeah, I moved at a very similar time right before,
yes,
at the
October,
end of 2019.
Yeah.
So my partner and I moved here, and the original idea was just, it's a pretty small area. We didn't really have a lot of friends here at the time. I just had my family and I thought, well, I'll just go on tour to go see people.
Yeah, of course.
And then, nope, that's not going to happen for a few years. But luckily, about a year or two later, friends started moving up from San Francisco. So now I have a nice scene of old buddies that I've hung out with for years. Now they all moved up here. So it's good.
Oh, okay. So you're in Northern California? You're saying up, so I just want to be clear.
Yeah, is that right? Yeah, Northern. Okay. It's about an hour and a half south of the Oregon border.
Oh, okay.
And it's about, 6-hour drive north of San Francisco. And it's on the coast. And it's on the coast. So it's redwood trees and sort of mountains. Yeah.
So let's get back to, we'll try to minimize our cynicism about the marketing speak involved and trying to figure out a story to tell. Do you feel like your move home has influenced this record, any of your mindset about some of these beautiful lyrics of Occ? Like, they're beautiful but enigmatic, and I'm still processing them, to be honest with you, and I might be for the rest of my life. I may not ever quite get it. But do you have a sense of why they thought there was some connection between maybe this record and your move home to where you're from, you know, your origin story? This is becoming a leading question, as I'm prone to do.
Yeah.
But Ben, do you have a sense of why they thought we got to connect these two things?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was being slightly, maybe a little cynical, but maybe just joking around about that. But
yeah, sure,
I think this is the first record I've recorded here from beginning to end. So I did a record that came out in 2020 that I did some of it here because I just moved here and I sort of finished it up. And I did a record called Veiled Sea, which was recorded here, but was very much almost a pandemic record because it was recorded right at the beginning. So it didn't really feel home or, you know what that time felt like. It felt crazy. So this is sort of the first record about returning home in a way.
Yeah.
So, and I did do some conscious production moves where when Six Organs first started, I was living here and I released a few records while I lived here. And so I did some moves that were similar to those records in terms of having it more acoustic, a little more stripped down. Even the cover of the record in a way is sort of related to a record I did at the time called Dark Noontide because the picture was taken very close to the same area. It's kind of an insider thing, but I'm looking in the same direction. So there is a relationship between the stuff I used to do when I lived here and this record now.
Okay. So I think you might have some years on me, but you're not the first person I've spoken to who is, let's say, middle-aged and doing some stock taking doing some reflection. It's just normal. It's natural. I think the pandemic, either depending on your perspective, exacerbated that line of thinking of like, when was I most happy? When was the world even better? Not even me, you know? So I just want to, you're in an interesting position. I feel like I'm in the same. I moved. I'm getting to a point where I'm like looking, thinking about my past a lot and what it means to have family. I miss my parents. They're still in Ontario. Did you move home, first of all, for family reasons, among other reasons, like to be closer to your family?
Yeah, that is true. I was living on the East Coast and my folks getting older and they don't necessarily think they need me. But when my dad decides that he's going to climb on top of the roof to fix the roof, I thought, you know, maybe I should be back there and I'll climb on a roof for him. You know,
okay.
he thinks he can do anything and everything. And I'd rather be here and be able to help him out.
Yeah. So do you suppose where I was coming from is I think this pandemic has altered people's perspective on time. When things were the most comfortable, where things seemed to be going. I think it's just got people in this middle point of like, I kind of miss the way things were for me, but we're also, you and I would say, are in a situation where our youth is behind us more than maybe it's felt like before. Do you think those two things are dovetailing at all for you? The fact that this pandemic had occurred, you moved home to be closer to your family, which you can't help but think about your past, I'm sure, your youth, your youthful years. Is all of that swimming around maybe?
A little bit. I think for this particular record, there was more of a settling into domestic sort of living in a way. Just very, very small things that maybe, like, I got a dog for the first time in my life. I've never been able to have a dog because I was always on tour. So a little dog. Things that most people experience all the time. I mean, I had a dog when I was a kid, but this is the first time as an adult I had my own dog.
Huh.
So little things like that, you know, became pretty big. And that actually worked its way into the record in more abstract ways because a lot of the record was composed while I was walking the dog. So that doesn't happen. So there were these domestic elements that sort of molded the record a bit, but maybe not even that directly, not even me trying to convey them as much, but it just sort of happened.
It's so funny that you bring up this dog, or it's funny to me, because I was pondering the lyrics of the first song is The Mission. Is that right? On the album?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought I'm not going to say this out loud to Ben because it's stupid. But when I read the lines, stay close to me on the floor to pull no more, pull, to pull your love. I don't know why, but I thought of a dog.
Technically, I was writing about a friend in a new relationship, but that physical nature of closeness and being close, I mean, that, yeah, I was making a lot of fires at the time, and there's fire imagery in there. So nothing, I don't ever write exactly about one thing. So there's definitely imposing sort of my own idea of closeness, you know, probably with my dog at the time and what that meant in there. So I think that's a good observation, actually.
Okay. It may not be stupid.
It's definitely not stupid.
As we're speaking, my daughter is obsessed with dogs and she's got a campaign going. We're getting a dog. And I've been like, look, guys, you got to exhibit some more responsibility before we get a dog. You got to clean your room. Just show me something. Yeah. Some effort here. And they're doing better. They're only 9 and 12. So I'm not trying to go nuts on them, but I'm like, just show me that you can take care of your little space. And that'll show me that you can be responsible for a dog. Cause how many people in my situation, they're like, the kids want a dog. Guess who ends up taking care of the dog?
Oh yeah.
Me.
For sure.
So it's just weird. I'm in dog world. Right? She's just showing me pictures of dogs we can get. She's researching dogs. It's actually quite adorable. So you're liking the dog. You love the dog.
I love the dog, but I will say I kind of had a similar thing with my sister. Had a big campaign for me to get the dog.
Huh.
She has a dog. She's always had dogs, and she had a previous German Shepherd who passed away. So she was making a big campaign for me to get a German Shepherd. She has a Dachshund, and so the dog I have is part German Shepherd, but we also got a puppy. And the first couple of years were pretty insane. But there is actually a song on the new record that is directly about the dog. And that is the song My Familiar, because that song I was sort of reading this book about early witch trials in Scotland and these sort of demon familiars that kept coming up into witch trials that were ferrets, and but they're really demons. And I was reading that book right when I got the puppy, and the similarities between what the dog was doing and these so-called demon familiars, it was kind of uncanny. So that song, My Familiar, is about my dog at the time sort of being my familiar, or a familiar, the relationship, you know, between like a demon ferret and my dog.
Okay. What possessed you to read more about the witches and such things?
I don't know. It was kind of have an interest in, I mean, it's not straight anthropology, but maybe more from that angle. And I think the thing behind the book was basically that the stories that were being told in the witch trials, they really line up with the tales of like the fairy folk. So in the witch trials, when they're talking about these demon familiars, you can really superimpose stories about the fairy folk because it was, it's in Scotland. And so that's what the idea behind the book was. So I just thought it sounded interesting. So I wanted to hear about the relationship. But as I was reading it, I was like, oh my God. And my dog actually grabbed the book out of my hand at one point and ran across the yard, almost destroyed it. And I was, well, if that's not a devil familiar move, I don't know what is.
Yeah, dogs know almost stuff. Almost to prove it. Animals know stuff. That might have been purposeful. Yeah. And I'm sorry, you're talking about, I don't know enough about all of the witch trials. When I think of witch trials, I think of Salem, Massachusetts. Was that covered in your reading?
No, this was pretty specific about just these Scottish witch trials that had to do with, and a lot of like, you know, stories of them admitting like, oh yes, I have a ferret that is my devil familiar that sometimes sleeps on my bed. That there's a line in the song about sometimes the ferret sleeps on the bed. Sometimes the ferret wants to be fed, so it comes up and scratches my face and draws a little blood. And so that, so yeah. I mean, it's good stuff. It's good, like, you know, very entertaining.
I don't mean to perform the kind of armchair psychology that occurs on podcasts these days, but may I ask you, because we're talking about your artistic expression and maybe some of the context in this album, you said you had a dog as a child when you grew up in Humboldt. Is that right?
I mean, my parents had dogs here and there, you know? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then you didn't have a dog while you lived elsewhere. Then you move home.
Yeah.
You get a dog.
Yeah.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
So,
but
so
I wouldn't, I know where you're going with this. I know where you're going with this, thinking it's a return to childhood. I know where you're going with that. I would just say I always wanted a dog. I just never felt that I could have one because I would always go on tour. So now at home with I live closer to my sister and my parents, they can take care of a dog if I need to go on tour. So it does have to do with family, but it has to do with now I have somebody to help me watch the dog if I need to leave for a long period of time.
Well, if I may extend this a little bit, I mean, yeah, you left home and then traveled. You know, you were a little more unmoored, so you couldn't have a dog. Like, that makes sense. But when you get back home, you're still a musician. Maybe are you just not travel? You're not planning to travel as much, I'm gathering. Is that what you're getting at?
No, I plan on traveling. I just now I have somebody to watch the dog when I do travel.
Okay.
So yeah,
so it's maybe circumstantial more than whatever I was getting to. But it's striking to me that you feel comfortable and settled enough and have the support network to take care of the dog now that you're back home. So I just was curious. So maybe Drag City was right. There's something going on with you being at home and feeling comfortable.
Right.
And feeling like you feel you have a support network. Let's go with that.
I like that a lot. I like that. And that really erases my cynicism towards one sheets and promotion. And I think, I think if anything, this has taught me that I just need to, you know, plumb the depths a little bit more when coming up with reasons why I do records.
Well, I think being home in a time when people are feeling very unsettled and what the concept of home means for so many of us, I mean, that is something to no pun intended, to home in on, you know?
Right.
So I can appreciate that. Okay. So, so there are dogs on this record. I also was pondering this song, that is called, Slip Away. And it made me just these lines about missing the morning sun, looking for a battery to take a photo of the dawn. We live in a very hyper-mediated time. Oh, and then you write here, I miss the whole mystery, and it breaks and it breaks and it breaks and it breaks. Are you commenting on how we're living right now? And sort of like the fact that we can't do anything without telephones and, you know, mm-hmm. what do they say? Living outside of the moment. Do you feel like you're commenting on that kind of aspect of things?
In a way, I mean, that is a situation that actually happened to me. So I am literally just writing about a thing that was very frustrating, where there was a beautiful dawn happening and I wanted to take a photo of it. And my camera, my little, you know, camera needs some. It's exactly, well, I don't need to go. It's exactly like
I needed the battery.
Yeah, that exact thing happened. So, and it was so frustrating. And maybe is more of a commentary on, I think so. Just that I sort of missed that cool thing that happened because I was trying to document it. But
right.
also being frustrated that I didn't document it. It was kind of both. It's not an exact, you know, not exactly condemning the lifestyle. It's also just the frustration of not, because I, you know, even though I probably never would have looked at the photo ever again, even if I did take it.
Was this a real camera, so to speak? Not your camera phone, I'm gathering?
Yeah, a little like DSLR camera that I wanted to take a photo that needed some, you know, needed some batteries.
So are you someone who takes photos with your phone as well, or are you a diehard camera person?
No, I only bring the camera out on special occasions. I like to have it now, situations like that, sort of locked and ready to go, which you have to do and have the card in it ready to take photos and everything. Just that morning it wasn't set. But yeah, I took the photo on the front cover of the record too. So I took that photo. I like to sort of have it all together.
Yeah, no, that's fair. So I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but do you feel like, in terms of whatever, contemporary resonance, you know, you're writing songs in your, like you say, you're more settled, you're at home. Do you feel like there are threads of kind of cultural commentary running through this record? I picked up on something that I may have gotten wrong, but I do think that this is something people of our vintage and older and younger are going through right now. Like, what is the, can't you just live and enjoy the moment? Why do you have to document every damn thing? Whereas it used to be beautiful. It used to be such a fun and exciting thing to be like, look at that sunset. I'm breaking out my camera and taking a photo, and there's only limited film on this camera, so I got to make it count. And now we don't got that. We got, I took 50 photos of the sunset. Two of them look decent, but still not great. Doesn't really capture the feeling. Do you feel like you're making kind of cultural commentary throughout this record?
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely a commentary. I don't think you were incorrect at all. I think you were right on with that. Yeah. I was just mentioning that was actually a very specific moment that happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're very correct. I mean, it was very much. And then the line, you know, and it breaks and it breaks and it breaks. When I wrote that, I just meant like life breaking down, you know. And then when I played it for my partner, she said, oh, yeah, the dawn breaks. I like what you do. It's sort of, you know, and I said, oh, yeah, that's exactly what I meant to do there poetically. I didn't even thought of that. So,
okay. So that's a specific moment and experience you had. As I say, I'm still pondering where I think you're coming from. And this is, by the way, for those who haven't heard it yet, this is a record that blends these beautiful vocal lyric-led songs with instrumental pieces, and the whole thing is, as the kids say, kind of a vibe. Ben, as you reflect upon this record as a whole and ponder maybe what you were getting at, I'll go back to what I was trying to get to earlier, and I don't mean to pigeonhole it, but do you see commonality? Do you see conceptual threads between the songs that surprise you now that it's sort of about to come out and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think there is. I think, you know, to go back, I think what Drake City said originally with the press about returning home, I think that is the through line to it.
It is.
You know, yeah.
Home.
Yeah, home and all the things that happen at home is definitely centered around that, even if I'm not directly writing about that. So, you know, I was making a cynical joke at the beginning of it. I didn't mean to derail anything.
Let's just be clear to everyone at Drag City who might be listening and is appreciative. It's just a little,
exactly.
You can't help but be a little self-defensive about how your music is contextualized. Does writing about home now reflect your perspective on when you didn't feel like you had as much of a home? Does this record reflect a past sort of unmoored feeling on some level. As much as you are reveling, and I think, like we said, this support network, this feeling of comfort, do you think you're also writing in reaction to what, oh my God, what the hell was I doing for, was I just lost in the wilderness for all this time? Like, did you have those kinds of feelings?
You know, I haven't. I think I write about home a lot. So
yeah,
this is just this home. I have a song called Home, just Home, that I put out in 2004. So home has kind of been a theme for a really long time. I have a song called Returning Home. I have some words that just always appear, like the sun and just really basic sort of words. So
elemental stuff, like elemental kind of things, I suppose.
Sort of,
maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yes, I'm singing about home now, but maybe home just means a little different thing for me. Or maybe it means the same thing. I'm just in a different, like, scenario. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. No, I guess, I don't mean to do a rudimentary or a poor job of trying to figure out where you're at, but I mean, there's just certain things that seem to pop up on this. I don't mean to pry too much further, but spiritual practice, do you have a kind of spiritual bent in life, religious, these sorts of things? I just am curious.
That's a pretty tricky, I mean, I feel like I'm not trying to derail everything you say. So I apologize if it seems I'm just explaining. That's always a tricky question to answer because it's so easy for bands and musicians and artists to wrap themselves in symbols of spiritualism in order to appear spiritual. So, and because of that, I have a tendency to try to negate that. Even if I do have a practice or even if I do anything, I never want to, but then people might look at the music and say, what are you talking about? It's all over. So I don't know. So it's hard for me because I don't ever want to come across as. I do have sort of practices that I do. And I suppose my reading tends towards that sort of thing and sometimes thinking about it. So, yeah.
I mean, if you're reading about demon ferrets and witches, obviously you have a curiosity for other. I don't know if you're into that. It sounds like maybe you're grooming your dog to be a demon, like a demon ferret. Is that what you were?
No, I was kidding. Trying to keep her from being a demon ferret, but also I'm thinking demon ferret is a really killer stoner metal band name. So now I might have to start a band called Demon Ferret.
You might have a song title at least on your hands there. I just feel, okay, how about I put it this way? Can you tell me, without me providing a silly reading of it, the song Spinning in a River is one of the songs that stuck out to me in terms of asking this sort of question. Can you tell me a little bit more, and those listening, obviously, a little bit more about what might have inspired that particular song?
That song is sort of about, friendship and memory and images. That one's a tough one. It's pretty abstract even in my mind. So, I mean, some of these songs aren't really about anything as much as just images, you know?
Do you have, and I really appreciate that someone like yourself might not know where something came from. You didn't mark down the day. You don't know. It just happened. But some of this language on that song seems pretty specific. Do you have any inkling as you ponder it? And I'm sure you have to start pondering. Have you performed any of these songs yet?
A few of them. Yeah, I did do a few of them in the autumn of last year. Yeah. That song's tricky. That song was more based around the melody and just kind of words came, but it was very strongly based around the little melody that happens sort of in the middle of there. That's where everything came from. And then there are lots of rivers around here, so maybe that's kind of coming back to the returning of home, where imagery of rivers. I always go swimming in rivers in the summertime, so.
I interrupt this episode of my own show for a brief thank you for hearing my call to support me and my work on Patreon. We have seen a lot of growth in Patreon support over the last little while, which is amazing because that's my primary source of income these days. And I love doing this job that I invented for myself a whole lot. Creative Control is a listener-supported podcast. Do podcasters receive any streaming royalties from podcast platforms? No, not any. Does podcast advertising pay the bills? Not for a show at this scale, no. Do all podcasters get paid by companies for their work, like some celebrities do. No. No, most of us do not. We do this work to support our communities and because we love it. So what's the most reliable source of income for podcasters like me? Crowdfunding platforms like Patreon. So if you love Creative Control with Vish Khanna and want to see it continue, please see the notes in this episode. Click on the link that takes you to my Patreon and its different donation tiers with various incentives and benefits, and support me and my work today. Thank you again so much.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Is there some sort of trance or something that you're invoking? There's this line that, like I say, some of these songs I'm confused by, and that's fine. I like being confused. It's fun.
I am too.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know where to start this one, but in the separation of my mind from my mind,
mm-hmm.
in the holy desperation of our spirits entwined, I'll dream of spinning around and around and around in a river with you. Again, I don't mean to be hokey or heavy-handed, but I can't help but think of baptism. I can't help but think of pondering life beyond this plane, that kind of stuff. Clearly, maybe a song for someone lost to whatever comes after this. I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of that, no pun intended, swimming around in this song. So I'm just giving you my, again,
No, that's great. I love it. Thank you.
Impulsive reading.
Thank
yeah,
you.
No, it's fine. But hearing this back from me, pondering, maybe presenting this song to others, is any of what I'm saying resonating with you, or does it give you some perspective on it?
I mean, if you wanted, okay, so on those lines, we could get very pretty specific. So there's a melody that happens when I sit my mind from my mind part, that is a reference actually to, some of this song references an earlier song that I did called Spirits Abandoned. And I'd put that out on the Dark Noontide record around 2003. So the line about spirits is a direct reference to that song, Spirits Abandoned. And the melody is very, well, I don't know how similar the melody is, but the way I constructed the melody was very similar to the way I constructed the original melody. So it's a little bit of a throwback to that song. And that was sort of a specific thing that I was trying to do.
I see.
So almost like an Easter egg or something. But the lyric about splitting my mind from my mind, that it has a few different ideas. One is just straight up a psychedelic type line, you know,
like
psych bands from the '60s are always singing about their, you know, mind sort of thing through heavy phaser or whatever. So that was just tip of the hat to '60s psychedelic. But talking about splitting the mind from the mind has a couple other ideas of, maybe references to, and not that I was feeling schizophrenic at the time, but maybe references to sort of seeing how that sort of thing could feel way off in the horizon. But it also references the idea of, and this is where I say you were very, very right on with some of this stuff. It also references the idea of, well, there's sort of through many traditions, this idea of a spiritual companion. So whether in Valentinian Gnosticism, it comes apart as your other spiritual half that exists in the spirit realm. And then, but that goes to Catholicism. It goes into your your saint, you know, like your patron saint. So that sort of like your patron saint who's directly attached to you is sort of your idea of a spiritual twin in the other realm, whatever. So, and it, I mean, it goes all the way to certain contemporary Crowleyan magic of whatever they believe in. They've got sort of this holy guardian angel. So it's this idea that goes through many different cultures and traditions. So the idea of splitting the mind from the mind, I mean, it goes, you know, Socrates and Eudaimon, who, where are you getting your ideas from? It goes for the romantics, the idea of the genius, which is outside, you know, the genius is giving you these ideas. It splits up. There's many different versions of this. So that was the idea of my mind from my mind, was the idea of splitting oneself, like spiritually, materially, in a way. So it was, so those lines were sort of referencing all of that stuff.
I see. Do you, I don't mean to keep sort of hitting this point, but in an overarching sense, do you have any idea why you're feeling so reflective about yourself? Like almost to the point where it feels like in a narrative way, you're writing objectively about yourself and your other selves. And also, you know, you just mentioned alluding to a song you wrote 20 odd years ago. There's something going on this record where you are pondering yourself, I think. And maybe you always are. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know. Again, there's something here that I'm trying to kind of delve into. And I don't feel sure-footed about it myself. So forgive me. But are you feeling particularly reflective at this point? And if so, do you know why?
I don't think I'm feeling more reflective than usual, but maybe this record has less of the, it might be a little more navel gazing. And that's the trick, is you got to try to do this stuff and try to make it universal. And hopefully if you do it in the right way, it is universal and other people have the same feelings. If you do it incorrectly, then it's just some guy rambling on and on about himself. So I kind of generally do have these topics and subjects in the music, but this one might be a little more obviously like self-reflective, maybe.
Do you feel like you have created narrative characters in some of these songs, or do you feel like you're reflecting?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. That's the tricky thing. I feel, well, what do you feel about? Do you feel, I feel like there's less of, like people are less able to catch on to songwriters writing characters nowadays. Do you feel that way? Or do you feel like if somebody writes a song and they say, it used to be that you didn't assume that they're actually singing about themselves and there could be singing a character. And especially if they started going into unreliable narrator sort of stuff, I feel like it's really dangerous to do unreliable narrator songs nowadays and that people don't really pick up on it as much. Do you feel that as well? Or do you feel like maybe not?
No. It's a question I ask my guests often about lyrics. When I hear I's and you's, we get into, I know pronouns is a very confusing term for people these days, what it means. It's a politicized term. It's really fucked up. But my point is, I would say 90% of the time now, if I ask someone, these I's, these you's, these he's, these she's, these they's, whatever they are you writing objectively? Like when you say I, is it you? Is it even your current you? You know, and 100% of the time now people are like, no, I'm adopting a voice. I'm adopting a character. I had a conversation with a great songwriter recently that I just met. And encountered her music. Her name's Rosalie, and got a great record.
She's great.
Do you know of her?
I know. Yeah. I know her music, but I don't know her personally.
Yeah, and we got into it. Like, I feel like when someone is like a songwriter of her experience and vintage writes a song about a breakup, or a song that's construed as a breakup song, where I led us in that conversation is some people might think, oh, you're singing about a specific person. But really, you might be singing a breakup song about all of your breakups. You know what I mean? Like, you might be singing a song that's very multifaceted, and that you in that song is a composite of all of these yous you've encountered. And I think we landed on something there that I've been kind of touching upon with lots of people. These I's and yous are, there's a multiplicity at play. there. It's
exactly.
And so is that what you're wondering about? Is that what you're asking about? Because I feel that too. This I is not, I don't think, oh, that's Ben. I think it's some sort of collective eye or a collective you or something. I don't know how to put this anymore.
Yeah. Or it's an exploration of an idea the same way that certain thinkers can, when they're writing, they're just exploring an idea, or in fiction, they're exploring an idea. What would happen if this particular scenario happened? In songwriting, you can go pretty far with that, where you might have three lines, each has an I. One of the I's is actually about somebody, is actually more of a you. You're writing from the first person, but from another person, from somebody else's first person vantage point. And then you could have another line that is from my point of view, you know, and then you could have, and then the third I, yeah, it's just an exploration of something that doesn't even exist. All of those, you could have three lines that all have the word I, but they're coming from different, you can smush them all together in a way that it's maybe a little more difficult to do with literature, unless you're being a little more experimental in order to keep like what's happening here. Songs sort of allow that a little easier.
I went to many years ago, I went to some sort of radio broadcasting workshop thing about how you're supposed to talk to people on the radio. And one of the people said, when you're talking into the microphone on the radio, you should always say, "Hey, how are you doing?" You shouldn't say, "Hey, everybody, how are you all doing?" You should personalize it. You should say, "How are you doing?" And I think maybe I'm very cynical about these sorts of things, to be honest with you. I heard that. I'm like, oh, you're pandering, basically. But it's true. You develop a rapport with a listener one at a time. And as a listener, you feel like, oh, they're talking to me. And I think I like that's the psychology of that impulse. And I think for people who love artists, they do trust the artist to be reflecting something real about their own experience. And that when you hear an artist say, "I," or particularly I did this, I did that, you want to believe it's them confiding in you.
Right. So sometimes, but it is a little genre specific, don't you think? Because if I hear Slayer say what they're doing, I don't necessarily think they're doing that. Whereas if I hear somebody with an acoustic guitar say, "I did this," generally, you kind of tend to believe that, unless you know their songwriting style and they're always doing that. It is a little genre specific.
I agree with you, and I would say that I'm referring to genres of music or whatever, or expression that might be more steeped in a kind of intimacy. Like if I'm listening to a Wu-Tang Clan album, I know there's world building going on. If I listen to a metal record, I know there's world building going on. Like that's... I've accepted that contextually. However, and I don't know, there's probably myriad examples of this, but one of the most prominent that is coming to mind for me right now as we're speaking is Bob Dylan's Tangled Up in Blue. It appears on the album Early One Morning the Sun Was Shining, I Was Lying in Bed. He starts singing it live. Pronouns are all over the place. He was lying in bed. And I think for some people, they're like, what the fuck is he doing? I thought he was talking about himself. On this album, we assume is this Blood on the Tracks. We assume it's about his relationship, his breakup, and then he starts fucking with us. Or that's how, I don't even think that. But those are interesting choices he made. As soon as the record's out and he's out touring it, he's changing the pronouns. He's changing the verses. And I think, for me anyway, I wasn't of age when that record was out, but I am a big Bob Dylan fan. Like that... If I think on it, I have a sense memory of feeling, oh, that's unreliable narration, but it's still powerful. Like it's the same story. He's just switched the names or the pronouns, and everyone's losing their minds. So sorry, a bit of a tangent, but I hope related.
No, it's the old Dylan switcheroo.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Nicky Sutton, I'm a big fan of songwriter Nicky Sutton, and he kind of pulls moves like that. He likes to write a song, or he liked to write a song. He passed away, but where most of it is kind of accusatory, and then at the end, he kind of says, he'll say, when you left me, in the very end, it's like, oh, when I left you, pulls the old switcheroo because he has to come out on top because he's Nicky Sutton. I like that.
No, that's lovely. So it sounds like you have at least a similar mentality. here I am saying, oh, this song sounds like you're singing about a dog lying beside you, but you might be, it might be a depiction. It might be a story.
Right. And but maybe I've been informed about a certain how good it feels to be on the floor in front of a fire, you know, and so that can work its way into a line about how good it might feel for somebody to be on the floor in front of a fire with a human being, you know.
Yeah. Psychedelically, medically even, have you ever had out-of-body experiences? Have you ever had the separation of, like, this notion of you're kind of observing yourself on some level?
I've had a couple experiences of that sort of thing and some weird dream stuff. Yeah. But not like not a continuous thing. I think some of those practices are in order to encourage a sort of nonstop connection between that sort of thing.
Yeah. So again, let's suspend disbelief a little bit. Let's not assume all these songs are just about you and your experience and you being at home and you having a dog and whatever else we've talked about. Do you feel that this collective experience we've been going through or that we go through all, every day, I guess, but particularly since the world changed with this pandemic and you know, our relationship to time and life. Sorry, now I sound like I'm plugging the Time Life Company. But our relationships to living and what I don't know about you, and I've talked about this with others, Ben, but like time used to feel more infinite.
Mm.
Like I thought I had more time ahead of me and my family ahead of me. Mm. And then the world started to be like, eh, you got a little less time. I'm going to fuck everything up in the for you there. Like you think you've got time, but you're going to make some climate change more in your face. I'm going to create a bunch of viruses. And you're like, oh, no, I don't have as much time. Do you have that relationship with time and living at all? And do you, if so, do you feel like it's reflected on this particular batch of songs?
Yeah. I mean, getting older, it's, you know, definitely
there's that too. Yeah. Aging.
Feel there's probably not a whole lot of time ahead of me relative to when I was 8, which I don't think you could really even knew what time was, you know? So yeah, I think there's no doubt. And then the title of the record, Time is Glass, it does appear in the first song, but it's actually, I'm not going to give the exact thing, but it's a little bit of an obscure Simpsons reference, which I thought would be great to, you know, you have this record about all these ideas, but to actually have it slightly I mean, there's other stuff, but one of the meanings is there's a hidden Simpsons reference in that. It's abstract. So it's abstracted from something that is said. There's nothing on the Simpsons. Did they say time is glass? But there's a reference to time. And so, and it has a lot to do with, yeah, actually we're only being recorded right now, but I'll tell you with my current activity right here.
Oh, I see.
So it is a slight reference. I'm hoping somebody tells me what they think it is one of these days.
So I mean, are you still following The Simpsons? Were The Simpsons? No, you're not, right? Were The Simpsons very important to you at some point?
Here's what's interesting. I never paid attention to The Simpsons, but my partner, Elisa, is very well-versed in The Simpsons. So since I've been with her for about 17 or 18 years, I've watched a lot of Simpsons. And she can go head-to-head with people on The Simpsons trivia game, and she can win, like, every time.
So. This is a bit bizarre in the context of this show. I just interviewed Kate Stables, who is This Is The Kit. That is the name of her folk band and project. Same thing. Simpsons references. Like,
yeah.
And subtle and not-so-subtle Simpsons references.
Yeah.
And she's about my age, I think we figured out. So, like, we came of age watching The Simpsons when it was sort of starting. And so I don't know what's going on there. There's also this, and, you know, given that your record is sort of steeped in time, are you aware of this notion that The Simpsons predicted everything?
I have like, seen, yeah.
Yeah, these little jokes that they made, and then people are like, wait a minute. They said this was going to happen in 1994, and now it's happening. Is that a coincidence? Is that, what do you think? Is that a self-fulfilling prophecy or what?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have so many episodes, you're bound to predict some things, you know?
Yeah. Time is glass is interesting to me too, because you know, I think of the sands of time and what's time made out of. I mean, glass, sorry, sand. So then I was like, time is glass. Does that mean time is frozen? Sorry, man. I'm just writing an English essay about your album on my podcast. I apologize. But
no, thanks. Yeah. I mean, again, it was just sort of imagery that came and probably thinking about a few different things. So slight reference to the Simpsons, but yeah.
I feel like you threw the gauntlet down and I have to draw upon my Simpsons knowledge.
Let me know. I mean, like I said, it's abstracted, so it's not that line, but there's a reference. There is a line about time, and then the rest of the line kind of relates to glass in a way. That's all I can say.
Okay. All right. I will try to figure this out. This is an abstract record in many ways. So I think we're only going to be able to scratch the surface together today. And I think that's the way it should be. I think people should dig into it. I hope we haven't. Sorry. Ben, do you feel like we've done any spoilers today? Does everything seem copacetic?
No, this has been super fun. Yeah, okay. I love to, because sometimes you do stuff and you think, I can't wait till people get this. And then 10 years later, you don't. So this has been fun to be able to talk about it.
Okay. Is there anything in an over... We haven't really even touched upon the sound of it. And I want to give you an opportunity to maybe talk about that if you want to. In a general sense, is there anything you want to share about this particular album that we haven't covered today? Anything you hope people dial into? I know you do, again, you don't seem like the type who wants to lead listeners into anything, but just since we've been talking about it so much, anything about it you want to convey before we start to wrap up?
No, I mean, I think, I just hope people enjoy it. I tried to do a record that was a little less abrasive than usual. And I tend to kind of do that style of record every 6 years, I noticed. And I didn't realize that until this record was coming out. And I started to map it out from there's three records previous. And you can kind of go back every 6 years and they kind of come out around and they kind of have the same more mellow, less abrasive kind of feel to it. So just kind of a coincidence that the band is called Six Organs of Admittance and it happens every 6 years.
That's a coincidence, you say?
It is a coincidence. It's one of those funny coincidences. So yeah, I just try to make kind of a more of a mellow record, less of an abrasive record.
Okay.
By the way,
this Simpsons reference, is it an older one or a newer one? I meant to ask you that. It's an older one. Okay.
Yeah.
I have to think about this. And it involved the Johnny Cash Coyote episode by chance?
I will, I'm going to tell you after the podcast.
Okay. Okay. Sorry. I just want to know. No, I don't mind even doing the research. I don't mind. I just feel like.
Then let me know. Yeah. Let me know when you, yeah.
Okay. All right. Do you have plans to bring this music on the road in the near future?
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I haven't really done touring outside of the West Coast since 2017 because of, pandemic and stuff. So yeah, this year I'll be heading out and going to different places.
Okay. It is a bit of a tradition to have you on in an American election year. You are still stung by the predictions made at that point. But you're in the hot seat now, buddy. What do you think is going to happen? How are you feeling as an American citizen generally? And what do you think is going to happen in 2024 in the presidential election? Do you have a thought?
I have no idea, especially after talking about... I mean, yeah, I have no idea. I mean, it's just...
Sorry.
It's a fucking nightmare.
I meant this facetiously.
Beyond nightmares to our government. It's just like... It's unbelievable. I mean, there was always sort of a flimsy mask that our government wore in terms of human rights, but now it's just slipped off. So, I mean, there's not even the tiny flimsy mask anymore in terms of international law and human rights. So it's going to be crazy.
I never thought I'd live to see a time where a genocide could occur and get lost in semantics. Like, it doesn't seem to be preventable.
A government that fully supports and encourages a genocide right now. I think it's going to have repercussions way beyond this election, just in terms of people's reality. I think there's different ways of knowing something too. It's like, you knew that the United States is such an imperialist jackass country, but there's different levels of knowing. It's like a new level of even knowing, just having it so blatant. So yeah, very depressing.
It's just in the global stage, it's viewed as Superman, and Superman's not rightly or wrongly, whatever. Like, it's the superpower, but like, America will swoop in and has the means and the leverage to stop things, and then they don't. So it does feel a little bit like Superman is not, is just hiding out. You know what I mean? This is a very childish way of looking at it, literally, like as a cartoon or a comic book. But yeah, it's just very disappointing. And I can't imagine living there, because here in Canada, we're pretty helpless in some ways. We do. Anyway, I don't even want to delve into it. It's a bit of a.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's worth delving into, but it's really fucked up. And I didn't mean to end on this bummer.
No, so, it is. Yeah, it's an election. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, 2016 was. Yeah, it's pretty.
You're
pretty
on
dire.
You're my main political commentator, is what I'm saying.
Oh, good.
So you're only good. On.
I'm mostly
an
known
election
for my
year.
Political commentary. You know. So
sorry, it was all meant to be a bit facetious, and then yeah, it got a little heavy. But that's the way the world is. That's a weird thing. Actually, I'll say, talking about The Simpsons, is that the satire doesn't do it for me anymore. You know, I used to be like, oh, satire, I'll get a nice release valve from all this bullshit. And now the bullshit is so satiric in itself inherently that you're like, I get no joy, or I don't, you know. Weirdly, Jon Stewart hosting The Daily Show again, and I watch it, and he's good, I think, but also not doing it for me. Doesn't really give me the sort of like, haha, that got them. There's no way they'll recover from these jokes.
There's no way to get anybody to the extent that they need to be gotten anymore through media, probably.
Yeah.
You know, we've
seen you can't
that.
Shame people is what I'm getting at, I think. So, but then sometimes you can. Anyway, this is out of our realm and domain, and not what this record is necessarily about. So I will suggest a couple things. One, if people want to learn more about your touring and this record, obviously the Drag City website is one place. Ben, are you online? Can people follow you and keep tabs on your activities any one place or any couple of places even?
Sure. Yeah, I've got a website and I'm on Instagram if people want to know what's going on, or just pay attention to whatever Drag City will let you know what's going on.
Anything else going on? Yeah, anything beyond Six Organs or what we've been talking about? Any other projects coming up?
No, I'm pretty much concentrating on Six Organs now for this year. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Is there a song from this record that we can go out on? And if so, can you pick one and tell us why it came to mind?
Yeah, I think maybe just that The Mission, which was the first single, would be nice. It's the first song on the record, so it sets everything up to what everything's kind of like.
Okay. I don't know. I asked about it, a few of the lyrics. Is there anything you want to say about it beyond the fact that it's a bit of a tone setter?
No, I think that it's a very basic and simple song, so I think it would be, you know, probably fairly easy to listen to.
Who are these people walking in the distance in this beautiful photograph that you took for the cover?
That is my friend Ethan Miller, who I played in a band Comets on Fire with, and our friend Charlie. This is part of the crew that moved up here from the Bay Area after we moved up, and the photo was taken on New Year's Day 2003. A bunch of us go to the beach every New Year's Day. And then that's Ethan's dog.
Oh, that's Ethan's dog. That's not your dog.
It's Ethan's dog, which is a big poodle. And then Charlie plays with Ethan in a band called Heron Oblivion. So everybody kind of plays music with each other.
Okay. Any Comets on Fire activity in the near future?
Well, Ethan moved up here, so we're playing music together, just kind of jamming, and kind of had a new project where we were writing music and we were just in the studio, but not Comets on Fire. You know, it could always happen. We didn't really ever break up. Just everybody lives in different parts of California now. Yeah. Everyone's pretty busy, but we're all friends. It would just be, we would just maybe need to find the time. And then probably if you want to talk about you know, we would need a psychologist on the level way beyond the one that Metallica needed for their record to actually probably communicate. Other than that, we all communicate with each other one-on-one. Everyone's great one-on-one, but there's a certain dynamic that's very, very intense when we all get together.
I see. Okay. I'll leave that at that. I don't mean to pry. The only other thing I forgot to ask you about is your dog's name. Are you willing to share your dog's name?
Yeah. Arancini, which is...
Aran. Arancini?
Yeah, A-R-A-N-C-I-N-I, which is the name of a little, it's like a little fried rice ball that they make in Sicily that's sort of a pyramid shaped. So she's named after a little a Sicilian snack. Cini, oh, for short.
Cini for short, obviously. Yeah. Every dog has a short form name.
Yes.
Right? They have to. A pet name for their real name. Okay. Let's dedicate this to Cini. This is the mission from this beautiful new album, Time is Glass, by Six Organs of Admittance out on Drag City. Ben, always a real, real pleasure to speak with you. I hope you enjoyed yourself in some small aspect at least. And I hope we speak again and best of luck in the future.
Likewise, it was a lot of fun, actually. I had a really good time. Thanks for having me on.
Mission from Time is Glass, the new and lovely album by Six Organs of Admittance. Thanks again to Ben Chasney for appearing on this, the 860th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcast. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, this just happened the other day. Someone couldn't find an episode in their pod platform, and I said, oh, it's on my website or something like that. I can't remember what I said. I think I helped them. Who's to know who I help and actually make life worse for anymore? It's hard to tell from my perch here in Edmonton. Why am I talking like an evil overlord? If you can't find an episode of the show that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. Although, in terms of the monthly newsletter, you know what? I'll get to that when I get to the Patreon. Remind me. How are you going to remind me? I can't hear you. That'd make no sense. Please click on the hyperlink text that says follow Vish online to follow me online on social media platforms of all stripes. You should be able to find me on those things. But most importantly, I hope you'll visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast and me. This is my primary source of income right now. And getting back to that monthly newsletter thing, hey, I remembered. At $1 a month, that's the first thing you have access to, the weekly newsletter that I've been writing of late on the Patreon. So doing that more than the monthly newsletter, which was like a, you know, like a MailChimp thing, Now I do the Patreon every almost every Monday, I think, since I started this. There's a little newsletter. Sometimes it's my musings. It's mostly who's coming up on the show. So that starts at $1 a month. Then at $4 a month, you get ad-free episodes, and you get the episodes earlier than everybody else. $6 a month, all that stuff, plus you get bonus content. $10 a month, all that stuff, plus you get entered into a monthly prize pack draw. So there's tiers and things like that. Whatever you can afford to support me and my work is really, really appreciated right now. It's, like I say, it's my primary source of income, and I want to stick to that if I can, but we'll see how things go. Again, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol if you can afford to do so today. Thank you so much. Also want to thank independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. As always, I want to thank my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some of his music on the show. You can learn more about him at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this episode with Ben Chasney. I hope you'll check out Six Organs of Admittance and their new album, Time is Glass. Thanks for subscribing to this podcast or following it, and if you can, leave nice ratings and reviews on your pod platform. That does actually help enhance the visibility of the show. And yeah, otherwise, if you can tell your friends about the show and other people, that would be great. Otherwise, you don't have to do nothing. Just have a nice day, and thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.